You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
Today, we are tackling a behemoth. We're tackling an entire season. Now, we're not doing a best of season one. We're not doing our favorite episodes of season one. We're not doing a top five of season one. We're talking about every single episode from season one.
Okay, now granted, this is not a huge list because it's only 16 episodes.
That's right. This, like, if we are ever to start with something to ease into it, this is the best season, not only just because it's the first one, but because it's the shortest one.
Right, yes. Because they did the whole premiere in January and all the crazy production, la 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 la, and they held some episodes over, we only got 16 in season one, and therefore, this is probably going to be the quickest of these kind of roundups. And this is an idea that we stole from Standard Orbit with Drew and Mike Schindler. What they did is they went through every single episode of the original series by season. So in one episode, they did season one, another episode, they did season two, and so forth. And they decided if an episode was absolutely essential and worth keeping. Like if you were to say to a friend, okay, these are the episodes you absolutely must watch to understand everything you need to know about Star Trek. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go one by one through each episode of season one of Voyager and decide, are we going to keep it or can we chuck it?
Now, you and I have not done, like, we have not made a preliminary list. We have not gone through it.
Not at all.
And said, like, this is the one we want, this is the one we don't want, because you and I wanted to kind of go after this. Like we wanted the moment of discovery to happen as you guys are listening to us.
Yeah, that's the fun of it.
Yeah, and Char, you and I, like, we're going to argue back and forth, because I'm sure that we're going to disagree, and how do we decide if there's no moving us? Like, is the power of persuasion? Do we flip a coin? What do we do?
That's a really good question, because when that happened on Standard Orbit, ultimately, somebody won out when they made their cases, because maybe Drew would be in favor of an episode, he would make his case for it, and then maybe Mike would relent and say, okay, I'm willing to go with that. Or the opposite, maybe Mike made a really good case and Drew said, well, you make a good point. I guess we should keep that one. There were times when they were really on the fence. And I think ultimately we're just going to have to see what happens, how impassioned we get in our arguments and how much of a deadlock, we put ourselves in. We'll see if it happens, where it happens, and go through those motions if we cross that bridge.
Well, I'm interested to see how it goes and where it goes. So let's just go ahead and start.
Let's do this.
So season one aired in 1995, Caretaker, episode one, January 16th. Now, this is technically episodes one and two.
Yes.
How it's counted in production. This is kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, you kind of have to have the first episode. It kind of, I don't know, it establishes everything.
Yeah, this establishes the characters, this establishes the freaking mission statement of the show, and, like, this is where everybody meets each other for the first time, where we figure out what the mission is, like, where they need to go, 70,000 light years from home, this is the first time we see the Bun of Steel, so yes, of course.
Yeah, no doubt about it, no argument whatsoever, let's move on.
Let's move on. So, episode three, Parallax. Now, this one, for those of you who don't remember, we're going to go through each episode and give a brief summary. I'm just going to read how it's described on Wikipedia here. Voyager is trapped in a quantum singularity's event horizon, and Captain Janeway must decide between Lieutenant Carey and former Maquis B'Elanna Torres to be the new chief engineer.
Okay, now this one is a lot harder, in my opinion,
yes,
because you have the very important element of making B'Elanna the chief engineer. However, the rest of the story, like the main plot that drives this whole thing, is really not that great. And it's very heavy on the techno babble. It's very science, 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 blah, 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 blah. There is some Janeway and B'Elanna bonding as a result of that, which is great. But is that absolutely essential viewing? Could you skip this episode and still find out that, yes, B'Elanna became chief engineer and move on with your life and not have to endure the rest?
I have to agree with you because the story that they're in, like where the Voyager's in danger, yeah, that's not necessary towards the overall arc of the show. Mm-hmm. But you do have those nice moments between Janeway and B'Elanna, and it's character building. But with the engineer thing, you know, B'Elanna becoming engineer, it's a nice to see that process. But it's one of those things where, like, as you're watching Star Trek, you don't question, how did Scotty become the engineer?
Right?
He just is the engineer. So that could be said with B'Elanna. She just is the engineer. But, like, the only reason why I could see a positive in keeping this on the list as mandatory viewing is that character building, that relationship building between B'Elanna and Janeway. Because this was, like, just an episode of Go. B'Elanna was screaming at Janeway on the bridge saying, who is she to make all these decisions for us?
True.
Then we see them come together, but I don't think that's enough. How about you?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised you didn't put up more of a fight for this one. But yeah, that's kind of where I stand with it. I don't think it is absolutely essential. I do love the character building, but it is not essential viewing. You can go on with your life without this one.
Yeah, I think so too. All right.
Okay.
Well, we're moving right along.
We are.
We probably should slow down just a little bit.
Oh, I don't know. This could get a little heavy as we go on. We'll see.
All right. Episode 4, Time and Again. Investigating a planet just devastated by Polaric explosion. Janeway and Paris are engulfed by a subspace fracture and transported in time to before the accident. That's a good summary. I like that. There's a lot of good key words there.
Yes, it's probably better than the episode itself. Hate to say. This is not a favorite of mine, and I vote to chuck it. What do you say?
Yeah, I wish I could come up with a reasoning just for this, just to play devil's advocate, you know, where just I could say, like, oh no, you know, it has this, and it has that, it has this, and that, and but it just doesn't.
No, it's a very mediocre episode and has absolutely no real effect. Well, okay, no, actually, I have to take it back. This is where we really find out about Kes's telepathic abilities. But again, we know this later on. Is it really essential to have it here? I mean, just because they awaken here? No, I don't think that's strong enough for this mediocre of an episode. I think you have to chuck it.
I think so, too, because here's the thing. This is a little disappointing, too, like going back and looking at it. Caretaker, solid pilot. I think
it was.
It's not actually a pilot, but solid first episode.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say among the absolute top of Trek.
Yeah, absolutely. We have argued that, and we could argue that. Mm-hmm. Parallax, I mean, is it necessary to the overall arc? No, it's a solid episode, though. I really like the episode. I think this is a great second outing. But then you have Time and Again, and you're like, really? We're going to have this low of an effort this early in the show?
Many people, they call Voyager TNG light, and this was definitely one of those recycled TNG ideas that never quite made it to the screen, and so they put it into Voyager, and it just has no real overall meaning to the series. So, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, episode 5, Phage. An organ-harvesting species known as the Vidians steal Neelix's lungs, leaving him to die. Before we even talk about this, I have to say yes. This has to go on mandatory viewing.
Yeah, I think so too. The reason why? The Vidians.
The Vidians. This is not the last time we're going to see them. And so
exactly.
We have to have an introduction to this very monumental and real threat to the Voyager crew.
Absolutely. Not only that, but these are good villains, and I feel like this is a good episode.
This is a solid episode, and this is key to Neelix character building, getting to know Neelix, where he's not just the cook. He's actually he's a person. He has a backstory. We get to know a little bit more about him and his personality. Whether you love it or hate his personality, we get to know more of it. And
yeah,
I think, this just adds to the reasoning of gotta watch it.
Yeah, definitely. I think the fact that you have the Vidians being a recurring villain kind of means you have to keep this introduction.
Mm-hmm.
This one's too important not to. I mean, it really presents just how much of a threat they are and why, and it is a good story. So if it's a good story, well, I think you keep it. Okay, next one.
Next one, number six, The Cloud. The crew enter a nebula to collect samples before realizing it's a living organism and not before doing it an injury.
Okay.
This one's tough.
Yes, it is. This one's tougher. Oh, as much as I love this episode because it has some good character building moments, I don't know if it's essential. Again, it's that whole thing where the main plot that gives us all the good stuff is so boring. It's not that great. And I don't think it's important to Harry Kim's character throughout the series that you find out that he remembers being in his mother's womb. I just can't justify that.
The only reason why I could justify it is by saying this episode shows the mentality of the crew. This shows the mentality of the Federation and a starship in the Delta Quadrant, where they could just go out and leave footprints and leave everything in their wake and leave nothing but negative stuff behind them. But they went in for purely scientific reasons. They made a mistake. They admitted to making a mistake, and they are not going to leave until they fix it. And Neelix doesn't understand it. Neelix doesn't get it.
Yeah, he's kind of the everyday viewer, I think, who's just like, really, you're going to do this again?
Yeah, he has that conversation with Janeway, which I think is a very important conversation, where he says, he's talking with Cass as well. He said, he's like, these people have no idea what they have. They have a starship at their disposal. And like, why don't we just blow it up this week?
Yeah, you know? Let's rip it apart.
And so Janeway says, like, no, this is what we're doing. And like, if you want to leave, that's fine. But you're going to do it after we fix this mistake. But like, that's just right. Like Jonah dismissed. And the whale, you're going in. I could argue yes on this for that reason of this shows the mentality and the direction that the crew in the show is taking. But if you are absolutely in disagreement, I'm not going to stand my ground because I think it's not that great of an episode. It's not that great of a story, but it shows us something that we need to see.
You make a good case for it. You really do. I mean, if you get anything out of The Cloud beyond, say, character building moments, this is a really good way of, I don't know, this is a good display of just Star Trek in general. This is, you know, we are explorers and this is how Starfleet operates. That's what this episode shows a lot.
Right.
But I don't think it's enough to hold up and say, you really have to see this or you're going to be missing something big. I just can't go there. So I would say to chuck it.
I am going to agree with you, but mainly because of our next episode.
Okay, which is...
Episode 7, Eye of the Needle. A micro-wormhole is discovered that leads to the Alpha Quadrant, and the crew make contact with a Romulan ship on the other side. This is their first taste of home.
Yeah, and the first will they or won't they get home 6 episodes after.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is Episode 7, and this is the beginning of a lot of will they or won't they get home. Now, obviously, as viewers, you know that they're not going to get home because we just started the show. It's February.
Yeah, a little soon. A little soon.
A little soon. But the thing is, though, that is such a big cornerstone of Voyager, of the will they or won't they get home, or like of Harry being obsessed with trying to get home and you know, willing to sacrifice everything in order to get home.
Totally.
I feel like you need to watch this one.
Yeah, well... It's, for one thing, it's a very good episode. I feel like it's very written, right. Very strongly done. And I think it, as much as The Cloud displays this is what Starfleet is about, this episode is what Voyager is about. And so on that front, this is essential viewing. You do need to watch this one to really get a feel for Voyager. It's uniquely Voyager, and it's very good. And also, it's got that nice connection with the Romulan. And so if you like Alpha Quadrant aliens... This is a perfect kind of callback to the Alpha Quadrant, and I don't know. I don't know how you can skip this one at all, honestly.
Yeah, I don't either. I think this is definitely, like, this is such solid viewing. This is a solid storyline. I love wormholes. I love the Alpha Quadrant, and I love Voyager, and so I think this is definitely something that needs to be viewed. So there we go. Okay,
that one's essential. We're keeping that one. And then we go to another lovely episode, ex post facto episode 8 of season 1. What does the synopsis say for that?
Tom Paris is convicted of murder on an alien world, and his punishment is to witness the murder from the victim's perspective every 14 hours. Now, I like this episode. I do. I really do. Not a lot of people like this episode, but I do. I think it's a great Tom Paris episode. I think it's a nice murder mystery, and I'm a big fan of those in Small Helpings. But I mean, and it was directed by LeVar Burton, and that's
it was,
just cool.
Yes,
we get to see Tuvok's investigative skills.
Yeah, I do like Tuvok playing detective. That's the one thing that I really get out of this episode. But I am not a fan of this episode in general. I feel like it's pretty weak. Another TNG holdover, maybe even. Mm-hmm. And therefore, definitely not essential viewing. I mean, this has absolutely no consequence to anything that happens in the future. So, not interested.
All right. Well, I can't defend it because I like it, but I don't think it's essential viewing. And
all
so,
right. It's chucked.
We're halfway through.
Yeah. Well, I think here's the thing about season one. The episodes that are really good are really good. And the episodes that are not so great are pretty bad, and we haven't had too many in the middle ground that we've actually had to argue thus far.
Yeah, a lot of people like to criticize Voyager for this fact, but I counteract that with, look at early TNG. You know, look at season one and season two. When you had a good episode, like even their good episodes in season one and season two were just okay.
Well, they were good in comparison to the rest of TNG season one. Sorry, Earl Grey. We're going to hate on your show for just a minute. But yeah, like if you think about any of the other Trek series, season one has always been shaky, with the exception of TOS, because TOS came out strong. But every other newer series has always struggled to find its footing. And Voyager is no different.
Yeah, Voyager is no different in that aspect. And I can just hear the Earl Grey people screaming, "Measure of a man, measure of a man."
And you know what I would say to that? Death wish, death wish.
Exactly, death wish. And yeah, so that's our measure of a man.
So, I mean, yeah, certainly they wouldn't have continued had they not had any good episodes. But they struggled. They have all struggled in some way, shape, or form. And for a little length of time, some found their footing more quickly than others.
All right, so episode 9, Emanations. Harry Kim is transported to an alien world at the same time a dead woman's body arrives on Voyager. Now, we just got done talking about this one.
We did, yes. Not that long ago.
Not that long ago, mainly for its message. And it has a great cultural message and a great societal message, but I don't know if this has a great Voyager message.
No, this is kind of a one-off, and I don't think the fact that this is the first time that Harry really dies is enough weight to pull and say, oh, you can't miss that, you know.
Yeah, I got nothing in defense of this one whatsoever. Mm-mm. I think, like, the only way that I could say is that it's worth its essential viewing is just for that message, that societal message.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for that. It actually brings up some fantastic things that we talked about in a few episodes ago about, say, doctor-assisted suicide and one's right to die and religious cultural stance on these topics, all of it, but I don't think that makes it essential Voyager viewing. It just doesn't. No. It's not that good of an episode. It's not even that strong of a piece.
Right.
So,
like, I could almost argue it as essential Star Trek viewing more than essential Voyager viewing.
I could see
that. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, because of the message, I would say, yeah, it's a great Star Trek story, but it's not a good Voyager story. There is a distinction. We're going for Voyager, so chuck it.
Prime Factors.
Ooh.
Episode 10.
Not at all pleasurable.
A race that could shorten Voyager's journey with a transportation device will not share its technology. This is another will they or won't they.
Already
in season one, this is our, like, episode 10 of season one, our first one was episode 7, Eye of the Needle, and just 3 episodes after that, we have another Will There, Won't They?
Yeah, again.
And I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes, keep it.
Yes, you kind of have to, because this is a really good story. Again, it's like quintessential Voyager right here, the Will They or Won't They. But you've also got a really good element of turning the Prime Directive upside down and turning it onto Starfleet. They're usually the ones out there saying, look, no, we can't share our technology with lesser advanced species. This time, they're getting that end of it, and they don't like it because it could mean they could come home, and some really cool stuff happens in this episode. I mean, mm-hmm. You've got the whole thing with stealing the technology, and then you have the reveal that Tuvok helped, and how that affects Janeway. And for that character building stuff, that is really important. Plus, if you want to go back to B'Elanna being chief engineer, this is a really important turning point for her because she's been in her role now as chief engineer long enough to where she feels like she has some responsibility as mm-hmm. an officer to not go through with stealing this technology and having anything to do with it. But at the same time, her pal Seska is like, come on. Come on, if this works, we're going to be heroes and it's going to be great. And what are you thinking? Let's just do it because that's what Seska likes to do. And so she's very torn about this. Does she take more of the moral high ground or does she do what she wants to do? So it's really good viewing. I call it essential.
I call it essential as well. And I like your explanation of Seska's argument because I think that's pretty spot on with Seska's argument. It's come on, come on.
Don't even think about it. Just do it. Come on.
B'Elanna. Come on.
Like that. She should have actually done that in the episode. It would have been great.
But everything you're saying is true, and mainly because of the interaction between Janeway and Tuvok. And it's just a solid episode. And I like that perspective about how it's Star Trek turned on its head. About how when you're in the Alpha and Beta Quadrant, Federation is king. Federation is strong. Federation has a presence, and they're the ones that say no. With Federation in the Delta Quadrant, they're the ones getting no told upon them.
Yeah, yeah. And tables are turned. Things are different out here.
I like that. I like that a lot.
That's very unique to Voyager. So that's essential Voyager.
Now, this next episode, episode 11, this one's pretty, this one is pretty much like absolutely 100% have to, and that's State of Flux. Janeway and the other senior officers attempt to flush out a spy who is sending information to the Kazon.
Yes. So, okay, you've got a couple things already that make this essential viewing. The Kazon, because we established them in Caretaker as powerful. I don't think that's the proper word, but they are villains and they are the aliens that we are bickering with.
They're formidable.
There you go. That's a good word. Yes, there are formidable species. And, of course, you have this whole thing about what happens with Seska being revealed as not only a spy, but a traitor.
That's right. I mean, a lot of stuff happens in this episode.
Yeah, a lot of things go down.
There are key plots that come up later on in the show with Seska and the Kazon. Very key. Very key. And I mean, this shows consistency in Voyager. This shows consequence and cause and effect. And that's like the entire purpose of this podcast is to talk about the episodes that cannot be missed because of something later on, or at least that is so integral to the essence of the show. This one is not so much the essence of the show, but integral to plot lines later on. This, I feel like this is a prime example of why we're doing this podcast today.
Yeah, and for that reason, you can't discount it whatsoever. Plus, if you're, for whatever reason, angry that we chucked Ex Post Facto, this is another kind of investigative episode. It has a mystery, and you got to figure out who's doing what here, and I feel like this is a much stronger outing of that anyway, and so it's definitely a keeper.
Definitely a keeper. All right. Episode 12. Aw. Heroes and Demons. The holographic doctor must rescue crew members who return to light energy in a holodeck simulation of Beowulf.
Why'd you say awe?
Because I have a special place in my heart for this episode. I love Doctor episodes. I love Schweitzer.
Oh, I love Schweitzer. Mm-hmm.
I think this is a great character building episode for Doc. This is where we see him. This is the first time we see him outside of the medbay.
It's true. Yes.
Like, this is the beginning of something. We always talk about the beginning of something with the Doctor, and that's why I like this episode, but I don't know if it's essential viewing.
This is the episode where the Doctor really starts to get some self-confidence. That's how I look at it. However, is it essential? I have to side on the answer of no, because we get much better Doctor character building episodes later on, and therefore, this one is kind of inconsequential. It's a holodeck malfunction kind of episode. We think Harry could be dead, and he's not. We see some great costumes, and if you had to read Beowulf like I did in high school, the very premise of this episode is really boring and wants to put me to sleep. Just I could not stand this episode when it aired because it was right when I was reading Beowulf. I had to do it for English class.
Awesome.
And I was just, really? Really?
See, oh, I had the opposite effect because I was reading this too, or at least I was on the fringe of either right before or right after. And I was just like, oh, cool. What a coincidence. You know, like,
But you had. That's funny that we had such opposite reactions. I was not a fan of Beowulf. Maybe it was because I also had to read the Odyssey right, or like either right before or right after reading Beowulf. And I was just so sick. I wanted to read something from the 1900s so bad.
Oh, the Odyssey is such a great story.
Yeah, but it's so hard to read.
Oh, Charlene.
You know, I know this is like original epic writing. But when I was 14, I could not appreciate it. I just couldn't. I was busy listening to Nine Inch Nails and reading the Star Trek novels. This was not a world I could delve into. It was just not for me.
Painting your fingernails black and writing poetry.
No, I was never a goth kid.
I'm sorry. But anyway, like, I listen to Nine Inch Nails too. And so whenever I hear that, I just assume everybody did the same.
Oh, no. I was never quite that into it. I don't know. I was always grouped into the goody-goodies for whatever reason.
I never would have guessed that, but...
Really? Oh, I gotta know now. What group would you have stereotyped me into?
Moving on.
No. You're not getting out of this.
Oh, no. I have no idea what group I would peg you. I would peg you in the same group that I was in. I was the social guy who everybody liked but was nowhere close to the cool kids. I was the kid who everybody knew, no one really had that big of a beef with, who was accepted in every circle, but didn't get invited to the parties.
To some extent, that was me too, but I was not a social person. I often hung out with the outcasts, the quote-unquote rebels, and I was an outsider, definitely.
Well, did Beowulf help you through that?
Hell no.
Oh, well, that's too bad, because this episode helped me through some stuff, and that's going to the next episode. But before we get to that next episode, I just want to echo your comments by saying that you're spot on with why you said no, because the main thing that you said was there are better examples of the Doc finding himself or becoming an individual than this. It accomplishes it, even though this is one of the first, is accomplished much better and much more succinct later on, and so we can save it till later on.
Okay, so we're chucking Heroes and Demons.
Chucking Heroes and Demons. We're going on to episode 13, Cathexis. A shuttlecraft with Chakotay and Tuvok aboard is attacked. Chakotay is left brain dead, while Tuvok begins acting strangely. An unknown force begins controlling crew members. I think the fact that I don't really remember too much about this episode means that it's probably not essential viewing.
That's probably a good place to start. I would say for the Janeway Chakotay fans, this is an essential one for the very end where Janeway puts her hands on Chakotay's chest for no real apparent reason because she just does this with anybody who's in sick bay, right? Yeah, it was kind of weird at the time and I just thought, wow, okay, she's very touchy-feely. And that part of it's great, but this is another one-off that has no real connection to anything. You can find out later about Chakotay's Native American heritage. This one does nothing for me. Nothing at all. We can chuck it.
Yeah, I don't think much argument needs to go into it. I think it's just this is one of those episodes where you're just like, okay, that happened. Let's move on to next week.
Pretty much. And that's very inconsequential to an overall list. So, bye-bye.
But on this next one, I'm thoroughly excited to talk about because it belongs to my main Star Trek woman, B'Elanna Torres, and that's episode 14, faces. B'Elanda Taurus is split into her human and Klingon halves by the Vidian. So we see the Vidians again.
Yep. Essential right there.
And essential from the episode Phage. Even though this is a character episode, and character episodes are not necessarily quote-unquote essential viewing because it doesn't pertain to the overall arc of Voyager. Now, you know, granted, like, Voyager's arc is getting home, but this is such a solid episode and key to the character. Where
yes.
When we see B'Elanna episodes in the future, whenever it's B'Elanna-centered, it can deal with the themes that happened and were displayed in this episode.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. This is a character piece, and it is an essential character piece because of so much. Like, we learned so much about B'Elanna's backstory that in order to really understand this character, you need to see this episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's essential. So I would not do away with this one at all either. I'm in agreement. It's a keeper.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like, it's hard to talk about it thoroughly when we don't have any discourse on this specific episode, because this is just so solid. It's just kind of like caretaker. It's like, bam, done. You got to watch it.
Yeah. Some of these are kind of easy. I think Faces is an essential one. If you want to understand anything about B'Elanna Taurus at all from any point going forward, you have to watch this one. You really
right.
do.
Right.
And not only that, but it's a great freaking episode. So for the reason that it's solid alone, I would keep it. But it's got a lot more going for it than just that.
Yeah. Also, like, when we see B'Elanna deal with the loss of her Maquis crew members, when we see B'Elanna deal with her father leaving, when she deals with having a baby, when she deals with her mother possibly dying and going to hell because of her, mm-hmm. all of this can be helped by watching Faces. All of this can draw upon Faces, episode 14 from season 1.
Yep, absolutely important. This is where we learn the complete dual nature of B'Elanna Taurus, just why she wants to rip her hair out at any given point, why she is so quick to anger, the conflict within herself. It's so important. And then following this episode is another really strong character piece with another character that I know you like, Neelix, and that is Detrell, and it's episode 15 of this season.
That's right, episode 15. A member of the Hakonians, a race warring with the Talaxian, arrives on Voyager, much to the dismay of Neelix, whose family were killed by a weapon of mass destruction this particular individual devised. So I think the next two episodes are interesting for us to talk about. Because here's the thing, is that B'Elanna's episode Faces deals with, like, is the origin of so many episodes that later on that we'll need to understand. With Jatrell, it is referenced, again, the mm-hmm. things that happen in Jatrell, I'll reference again because of Neelix. And it's a solid episode. It's one of my favorites out of all of Voyager's 7-year run.
Mm-hmm.
But is it essential viewing?
I think you get so much of Neelix's backstory in this episode that you're missing something without it. Now, how essential is it? I'm not sure, because you do pick up pieces later on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm reluctant to let this one go just because it is very rich. The one thing that makes me reconsider, though, is the A plot of kind of the Hiroshima thing. Ultimately, that does not have tons of consequence to Voyager overall. In fact, I would say it doesn't. It only affects Neelix.
Right.
Now this is a good one.
But here's the thing. Does the things that happen in Jatrell influence a much more important episode later on, Mortal Coil?
That's a very good point. I would side that yes, it does.
Okay, because if that's the case, Mortal Coil, I think, is, like, if once we get to that season, I feel like it's essential viewing, because if you think about it, like, where we have the Phage, where we get to know Neelix a little bit more and how mm-hmm. he reacts to negative situations. And then we have Jatrell, where we learn a little bit more of his backstory and about how he lost his family. And then we go, when we fast forward to Mortal Coil, where it's him when he dies, he literally dies, and doesn't see his family that he lost, that he thought he was going to see when he dies.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like maybe we need that Neelix trilogy of negative situations that happened to him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that this episode, if nothing else, sets the stage for Mortal Coil being such a strong episode. And I would say it's not as strong as Faces is for B'Elanna, but this is essential to understanding why Neelix is the way that he is, and therefore I am going to side on keeping it.
I'm going to agree with you because it does not take a lot to convince me to keep this on any kind of list.
Right, right.
So I say yes to episode 15, Jatrell.
All right, I know there's people out there who are going to disagree with us, but this might be a good time to say, hey, these are just our picks. What would you do and why? Go on the Babel Conference on Facebook. That's the Trek FM listeners group where only listeners know about this group on Facebook. And if you have not joined, request an invite and we'll get you right in. We have a lot of great conversation that happens there. And then we're also on Twitter. And I suppose we ought to tell everybody our handles just in case they don't know them. Mine is Oh the Profanity.
And mine is at the Insane Robin.
So hit us up and tell us what you think. But we still got one more episode to talk about. One more.
Yes, I'm really, really interested in your opinion on this one, because I honestly don't know what you're going to say. I don't even know what I'm going to say. But episode 16, this aired on May 22nd, 1995, and it's Learning Curve. Tuvok trains several Maquis members who have not fully integrated into the Voyager crew. Okay, here's the thing. This episode, this idea was way better than the execution in my mind.
Yeah, I can agree.
We have always said, and I feel like the world has always said, we did not get enough Maquis Federation headbutting.
Totally. Yes, we can all agree on that.
So who the hell are we to say no to this episode and remove the Maquis Federation headbutting and then say that there's not enough of it? But I can justify that by saying they don't really see that at all, and so it's not really a theme.
The thing is that this is not even that great of an episode. Yeah, you want the Maquis and Starfleet tension? That's great. The one highlight that I want to kind of like cut out of this episode and put in another just so we can keep it on the essential viewing is Chakotay punching the Maquis guy for being a jerk. But beyond that, it is not the greatest story, and the fact that we don't see any of these guys hardly ever again, except maybe in the background, these Maquis trainees, it does nothing for me, and it doesn't do a whole heck of a lot for Tuvok, really, I would say, overall. It confuses him at the time, because he's so used to training Academy cadets, and this is a very different situation, and he just can't understand why these guys won't just cooperate and do what he says, but does it have a lasting effect on him? No, it does not.
And these guest actors are so horrible.
You might have mentioned that before.
Like, maybe with the exception of the Bolian.
Who is awesome.
Yeah, I think he's fine, and we see him again. But yes, all those other actors, just every single thing that came out of their mouths, I was like, really? Whose nephew are you? That's all that I'm thinking.
Yeah, who are you related to, or who are you in relationship on Paramount? You know, who are you in a relationship with in the Paramount lot to get you on screen, because you've not taken one acting class, not one.
And so here's the thing. Here's my summation here. So, like, yes, we wish that we had more Maquis Federation headbutting, but we didn't get it. And so because, like, we wanted it to be a major theme, but it wasn't a major theme. So because it was not a major theme, this episode is fine to go on the cutting room floor. That's my position.
Yeah. Had it been maybe a better episode, I would maybe lean more on the side of keeping it. But as it stands, no, there's no real reason to have this. It's really not. I'm thinking maybe, okay, not only if the episode had been stronger, but maybe if they had even aired it sooner in the series. Or in the season, in season one, maybe I would have a different perspective. But the fact that they finally got their you-know-what together and then chucked this out at the very end of season one does nothing for me.
And maybe if we saw some of those people again besides just the Bolian,
Yeah, that would have more of a lasting effect because then we would know, oh, are they doing better? Are they still struggling? Are they satisfied with their jobs? What are they doing?
Right, we never right, find exactly. out. We never find out. And so because we never find out, we never know, we're never going to be disappointed, I say just get rid of it.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so Shar, can you please give us a rundown of the shows that we believe are essential viewing for season one?
You bet. We ended up keeping, I would say, a total of 8 episodes because Caretaker counts as 2. And so therefore, our list includes Caretaker, Phage, Eye of the Needle, Prime Factors, State of Flux, Faces, and Jitrell.
That's a good list.
I'd say that's a pretty good season. That's roughly half of the episodes.
Yeah, I mean, and for a Star Trek show, I think that's a good average as of right now. Some people are saying like, oh, that's a 50 average. That's an F according to the American school system. Yes. I say nay. For a season of episodic television, from the 90s, half of a season that's required viewing for stuff that's going to happen later on, I'd say that's a fantastic average.
I agree. I think that's pretty good. Certainly, yeah, with the serialized format, you cannot do an episode like this. Because you try to maybe pick apart Breaking Bad and say, oh, this one's essential, this one's not essential. No, they're all essential. You have to watch that whole series to get everything. I think the only one you could skip, honestly, is The Fly. And that was
I knew you were going to say The Fly.
Yeah, some people love that episode. I'm not a huge fan of it, and I don't see it as a huge consequence to dump that one. But anyway, yeah, that is the one advantage of episodic television is we can do something like this. And right. we are taking advantage of how it's designed. The fact that you can go in, watch 45 minutes of TV, get something out of it, or not, and then move on with your life. And you don't have to keep going. I mean, you can binge on Voyager, but you have good stopping points every 45 minutes as opposed to, oh my God, I have to go to bed and go to work tomorrow and actually have a life. And I'm only halfway through the season. Oh my God. How will I live?
Right, exactly.
It's a little different. So, keeping or dumping season one episodes of Voyager is not the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You know, watching it live to 3 months after the series ends to watch the Mirror Universe episodes.
You're like, whoa, man, I heard season 3 got dark, but this is crazy.
It got darkly. Anyway.
Oh.
Earl Grey.
We divide the ship into one of two ways. Port goes to port. I better not see any starboard guys on the starboard phaser target practice. You guys know which side of the ship you're on.
The orb.
And so they cannot impart to him the knowledge that he needs in order to raise his son. And Worf doesn't want to raise a human son. Like you said earlier, he didn't get the son that he wanted. He wants to raise a Klingon son.
The ready room.
We knew that Spock was popular, and we knew that Dad had some fans, but we were not prepared for what we saw happening in the social media, in the print media. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the New York Times reported that they got more hits on Dad's obituary than any other personality in the history of the paper.
To the journey! You're not a member of our race or a member of our culture, so we're going to say no.
That's kind of boring, and yet I don't know what else to do.
Oh, screw you!
Sorry, buddy.
Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. I remember revisiting it now in full, and I had forgotten the fact that Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Suliban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's all of these top-notch filmmakers, like people like Walter Murch, who literally wrote the book on editing. He, like, those guys all teaming up to make a big action kids movie, I think is really cool.
The 602 Club.
I think he's very much recreating that THX feel, and you may disagree with it. You may not think it's, you know, it's great, but it's on purpose. He wants that world to be that way.
Let me just say, conceptually, I agree with that. In terms of execution, that's where I think he failed.
Literary Treks.
It's amazing to me, as I reread these stories, how much of it I just kind of think of as Deep Space Nine these days, even though it wasn't part of Deep Space Nine, you know, the actual series.
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969 that had its moment, it had its time, and there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Women at Warp.
So she definitely knows cats. I say that right off the bat.
She knows cats and Bones.
Yes, definitely. Of course Bones would get annoyed with all the cat fur.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We're available on just about any platform where you can possibly get your podcasts. And none of them are possible without the help of our sponsors. So let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial, to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
And another way that you yourself can help us is by going to patreon.com/trekfm and consider becoming a subscriber to the network. And this helps us out greatly. This helps us with the costs of the bandwidth, the storage, the transmission, you name it, of producing all of these podcasts. So if you enjoy what we do, please consider becoming a subscriber if you haven't already. Let's thank our associate producers, Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, and Aaron Harvey. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at GeekFilter. Now, one more thing before we go, and this is always something that we love doing, is talking about iTunes reviews, because we have several people to thank this week. We have three people who they not only gave us 5 stars in the U.S. iTunes store, but they wrote us excellent reviews. So let's thank House Trouble, that's the username, Lauky Dog, spelled Loukydawg. Very clever. And Zachary Fruling, and I hope I'm saying your name right. They all wrote us fantastic reviews. And by the way, we've been praised a lot recently for our enthusiasm for Voyager, our energy for the podcast, and apparently this helps keep people listening and drawn in, even if they're not big fans of Voyager itself. We've heard that before, and we love that. That's fantastic. But I've also learned from these reviews that we're responsible for getting a couple of people into podcasts in general.
Hey.
Just because of this. So I just want to say, go us.
Yeah.
I'm feeling good.
Do we get like a franchise fee or like, is that, I'm just kidding.
I don't know.
No, that's really great to hear. I mean, like whenever we get a positive email or a positive tweet or a positive review, any kind of positivity where people are saying, because of you, I found this friend, or because of you, I started my own podcast, or because of you, I started looking at Voyager a different way, or because of you, I wanted to go do this, or because of you, I didn't know that anybody else went through something like this like you guys did, you know, like something like that. It's this, when we started this podcast, we had no idea that this was going to be the outcome. We thought we were going to get a couple of pats on the back, maybe a few listeners, but we had no idea we were going to get such a positive outcry from our listeners. And I said this just the other day to someone who wrote in, I genuinely believe that To the Journey listeners are some of the best listeners and audiences out there.
Hey, I can't disagree, and nor will I, because I would say the very vast majority of our listeners are top-notch, fantastic people. And it's not just because you give us love and let us know that, hey, maybe we have had some kind of positive effect in your life. That alone is awesome. But yeah, by and large, our fans are kind, good people who enjoy our program, and we're going to keep making it for you because we just love that. And most of our listeners are positive people, which we need all the positivity we can get in our lives. There's enough negativity going around to where, you know what, if we can provide one good thing for listeners every week, that alone is worth it.
And if all you get is one good thing in your week, I'm glad that it's To the Journey.
Heck yes. So that is amazing. And whenever we hear stuff like this, it warms our hearts. It really does. Lets us know that we are doing something right. And we really do thank all of you for not only listening, but for for expressing to us just how much you do enjoy the show, because we enjoy it too. All right, and speaking of enjoying the show, we're going to have another one for you next week, and what are we
going to
do?
Next week, we're going back to an old pastime of To the Journey, and that is an episode commentary.
Yay!
Where we bring it up on Netflix or DVD, and you time it with your viewing, and the episode that we're going to be talking about is from Season 3, Episode 19, Rise. Some of you might be saying, why on earth are you talking about Rise? And that's exactly why, because we don't talk about Rise. No one talks about Rise.
Yeah, I can honestly say right now, it is not my favorite episode. I haven't watched it in a good long while either. This will be a great refresher. Maybe we'll see something really good in this.
Maybe. Let's find the positivity in Rise.
Let's find the good in it. But until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!